Hi, this is Tom Salami of Device Talks. Welcome to the Intuitive Talks podcast. Surgical robotics presents an enormous opportunity for companies. There are surgeon shortages, sporadic healthcare, and miraculous technological advancement in both robotics and communications. So to understand where this sector is headed, we invited senior executives from Intuitive to share their company's impressive story. Change is coming. Consider these upcoming episodes to be guideposts for the future to follow. Hey everyone, this is Tom Salami of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Intuitive Talks podcast. Very happy to have Dr. Miriam Curet back on the podcast. She is Executive Vice President and Chief Medical Officer at Intuitive. We'll review her very vast portfolio. She has a lot of responsibilities at Intuitive. I was actually quite surprised. And she also practices. She also still performs surgery at a VA hospital in the area. And very interesting fact about where she operates and what they don't have access to. In this podcast, we'll talk about how Intuitive has been using data in clinical studies to help build the case for robotic surgery. And we'll also talk about the review process, the FDA review process that went into what appeared to be very quick review of Da Vinci 5. So we'll talk a bit about that as well. I really enjoyed the conversation with Miriam Curet, and I'm sure you will also. But before we begin, let's hear from our sponsor, Paragon Medical. All right, well, I'm happy to be joined by Zachary Stebbings. He's Divisional Vice President of Sales and Marketing at Paragon Medical. Zachary, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Tell us about Paragon Medical and its advanced surgical division.
Paragon Medical helps accelerate our customers' medical device product development through the deployment of manufacturing of high-precision components, everything from implants to surgical instrumentation to single-use devices, all the way through end of life and even at the beginning, product development services, design and development services. We're vertically integrated. We're part of Amatech, which was an acquisition that was made in December of 2023. Very excited about that acquisition for two reasons. First, it gives us access to Amatech's $7 billion portfolio of leading industrial technology solutions.
Wow.
Great add to our capabilities. Second, we also bring to Amatech a high performance company that's going to expand and broaden their presence in the med tech industry. Now, within Paragon Medical, we have two divisions, our orthopedic and our advanced surgical divisions, that have 17 locations globally. Now, these comprise 1.2 million square feet of manufacturing space and provides our customers with a seamless way to integrate across global product launches, to reduce risk, provide contingency planning, and the like. All told, though, Tom, we're here to simplify the process of getting our customers' product to the market. We want to be that partner that they engage with from development all the way through commercialization.
Well, that's great. Can you talk us a bit about your key focus markets and your core capabilities?
Absolutely. So we serve a multitude of anatomical, technological, and procedural segments within the med device market. However, we focus on drug delivery, robotics, and minimally invasive surgical. Now, within those markets, we deploy design and development services, stamping, coiling, laser machining, injection molding, clean room assembly, a variety of different core capabilities to get our customers to the market. Now, one thing we're really proud of is all our facilities are ISO 13485 compliant and they're FDA registered.
I will hear more from Zach and Paragon Medical a little later in the podcast. Of course, if you want to find out more information, go to its website right now. Go to paragonmedical.com. And Paragon, of course, is spelled P-A-R-A-G-O-N medical.com. Well, Miriam Curet, welcome back to Intuitive Talks.
Thank you, Tom. It's nice to be here.
It's great to have you. I love having repeat guests, although as we were talking before I push record, it's hard to believe it's been a few years since we had our first conversation. Time flies when you're putting on a great podcast. So thanks for being part of it.
My pleasure.
So I invite people to go back to listen to that first podcast to get your complete story, but we can certainly take pieces of it here and there when appropriate. But just to recap, if I'm recapping correctly, you were obviously a surgeon, a physician, but you, I think, had identified yourself as not a first adopter of technology in general in life.
Yes.
But yeah, you found your way to Intuitive. Just recap quickly, if you would. How did you come to join the surgical robotics company, which one would argue is one of the most advanced technical companies out there?
Yes, it still is kind of a shock to me, to be honest with you. So I started actually using it in a specific procedure in my surgical practice that had a very steep learning curve laparoscopically. I'm a teacher in the OR, and so my new students would really struggle learning bariatric surgery laparoscopically. And I thought that there might be some value to trying it robotically. And that's how I started doing it. And the value became apparent very quickly. And so I continued my association with the company from there.
Can you help me as a layperson understand what the robotic system brought to that experience that made it easier in my mind? I guess it's just a matter of hand motion, of having to push something just the right way or angle something just appropriate. What is it that surgical robotics, at least in that case, was able to do that you found so helpful?
Yeah, I think there were several things about it. You know, as you know, and your listeners know, doing something minimally invasive is so much better for the patient. But it actually was harder for the surgeon because we went from open to laparoscopy and we had 2D visualization. So you lost depth perception. The robot brought back 3D visualization. You now had to use long instruments where there was now a tremor and you lost the extra movements, the pitch and yaw, the wrist. Again, our endo-wrist instruments brought that back. There was this counterintuitive movement when you went to laparoscopy where to move your instrument tip to the left, you actually had to move your hand to the right. That's actually really hard to learn to do. And so the robotic system allowed you to do intuitive movement. You moved your hand to the left, the instrument tip moved to the left. And then there was the ergonomics. The laparoscopically, you are positioned over the patient in such a way that it creates real strain, musculoskeletal strain. And the system allows you to sit in an ergonomic position and to individualize that ergonomic position for whether you're a short surgeon like me or you would be a tall surgeon if you were a surgeon.
Oh, you don't know that. We're on Zoom, so but I'm just shy of 6 feet. Thank you for noticing that. I'm glad it projected my height appropriately. Well, that's great, and that's very helpful. I think it took a long time for folks to sort of understand that this wasn't, and we've talked about this before, that this wasn't just a gimmick or throwing technology where it wasn't necessary, that it actually is such an important part of the surgical experience. And just to draw off, I was at the Society of Robotic Surgery annual meeting last month in June. And granted, it was a selected population, but I was actually surprised at how important surgical systems became to the surgeons there. And I shouldn't have been, but I guess I had been approaching this like, oh, it's still working its way into the OR, but not, that, I think I don't get that sense anymore. Surgical robotics obviously is here to stay, but the importance is becoming, I think, more and more important as we move forth. Do you, with your interactions with other surgeons and with the medical world and the healthcare world, where are we in sort of the adoption period of surgical robotics, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think we've seen tremendous adoption across many different procedures and many geographies. And what we're seeing is that it brings value compared to open or compared to laparoscopic surgery, and that value can be can be appreciated by many different patients. So I would agree with you. In some procedures, it's now the majority of cases are done with a robotic system. And I think the other thing we've seen is so many other companies are interested in entering this field, which I think also validates its value and validates how important it is to surgeons and to patients.
Absolutely. Before we get into, I want to talk a bit more about that adoption and about the role that clinical evidence played into that. But just could you review your duties at Intuitive? You're the chief medical officer at other device companies. You'll have a chief medical officer for vascular, a chief medical officer for very clinical specialties. You're a CMO for an entire company that is touching many specialties. How do you engage the medical? What are your duties there? And how do you engage the medical world from your position?
Yeah, so I oversee several functional groups. I oversee what we call professional education, which is our customer training surgeons and training OR staff. I oversee our clinical affairs, which is the group that does clinical studies, both for publication, but also for regulatory approvals. I oversee our group that does health economics and outcomes research and also does a lot of work on reimbursement and health technology assessments. And then I oversee several medical officers, one in Europe, several here in the United States, that are involved in the scientific aspects of the company, doing research, and as well as in teaching. So they're proctoring and things like that. And then also our global public affairs, which is government affairs and media relations.
Okay.
Yeah, so those are my primary groups that I work with. I also have a very small group that's developing fluorescence imaging. So the ability to see, for example, cancer under a different wavelength than white light. So giving surgeons additional information in the OR.
That's a lot.
Yes, it is. but it's a wonderful challenge and incredibly rewarding.
I believe it. No, for sure. Well, let's drill down on one of those responsibilities, the clinical evidence area. I mean, this is something going back to my previous question about the adoption of surgical robotics. Obviously, a lot of that has to be just experiential. The surgeons need to see the value and tell their colleagues about the value and so on and so on. But the clinical evidence is going to drive this as well. What has been the... take us over the last couple of years, the clinical evidence that's being collected by Intuitive to support your systems. We'll speak, I think, most largely about DV5, Da Vinci 5. How would you describe the clinical evidence effort that you've undergone over the past couple of years at Intuitive?
I think if you look at the broad landscape, you know, there's over 30,000 peer-reviewed publications on Da Vinci technology, and the vast majority of them, 98% of them, we didn't have anything to do with those studies. These are studies that surgeons asked questions and went and collected data and answered those questions, primarily around what the value was in specific patient populations. Our efforts in terms of publications and studies have been first and foremost, what we call preclinical or preclinical studies. So studies that are done before we have clearance for regulatory purposes. We often publish those after we're done. But it's a little different than a post-market study where we are focusing on working less with the FDA and more just with the surgeons. Again, what's the value of the technology? We started to do a lot of database research studies. So you've got access to tens of thousands of patients. It's a very powerful tool because it allows you to see a broad range of patient populations and a broad range of surgeons' abilities as well. So, you know, we call it real world data, real world evidence, which I think is a little more pertinent to a given patient than the results of an RCT or a randomized controlled study. And so we are continuing to invest in those as well in each new procedure as it gets developed and comes out.
How do you view the studies that are done by surgeons that are not affiliated or not connected with Intuitive that surgeons are doing on their own? Obviously, that's great for you if the studies are positive, but they're not in your control, which I think is great because it's validation. But it seems like a double-edged sword of sorts to have all these folks out there running studies on your system. Having findings that you have, you know, that you don't really know the conditions of, maybe that you don't really know how they're conducted. How do you track all of those that are going on? And do you try to engage surgeons that are conducting trials? Do they I'm not sure of the process. Do they connect with you and let you know the trial's ongoing? Is there any kind of communications with folks who are running those studies?
Sometimes there's communication. Sometimes they will reach out to us, or we will find out about the study and reach out to them. But in general, we try to keep hands off. I think it's important for there to be independent scientific work done. And so sometimes we don't find out about it until it gets published when everybody else finds out about it. And there have been studies that have demonstrated no value to the system in a given study. And then I think the important thing there is, you know, was it a well-designed and well-done study? And if so, let's look at the totality of the evidence and see whether that's consistent with what we're seeing elsewhere. And sometimes it's the patient population. In this other patient population, there's value, but in this given patient population, there may not be as much value. I will also just comment, you may remember a few years ago, there was something called the LAC trial, which was a randomized control study looking at minimally invasive treatment of cervical cancer versus open treatment of cervical cancer. And the concern there was that in terms of cancer outcomes, overall survival, the open patients did better. And then there followed a database study kind of saying the same thing. And so, you know, the general response to that was, well, everybody needs to look at their data. And if your data shows that your outcomes are worse, you shouldn't be doing this minimally invasively. And what the company did was, through the foundation, support a large RCT to answer that question, because it's clearly a question that impacts patients. And the data that was out there was mixed and didn't give a definitive answer. So, you know, we do look at the totality of the evidence, and when it looks like we need more, we will invest in more data collection.
Was the finding of that maybe in open surgery, there's just more visibility and you see more of the tissue that needs to be removed? Or was there any sort of why those initial findings were what they were?
Yeah, our study is still, the foundation study is still ongoing.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, the thinking about why that might have been, it could have been a learning curve issue. And then people thought, well, maybe it's around the manipulation that's being done. You're using a uterine manipulator when you do minimally invasive surgery, and you're not when you're doing open. So the feeling is that nobody knows what the answer is. There's several things that it could be. But in this study, they're trying to control for those issues.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Have there been a couple of studies? You mentioned LAC. Have there been any other studies that you think that have been very influential in helping to drive adoption of da Vinci?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you that there was one or two that I would point to, but I would say in every procedure, it's really the totality of the evidence that's important. And when you start to get 30,000 publications, right, it's hard to pick one or two. I think we have found early in the adoption, these retrospective multi-institutional studies are really important. As you get further along in adoption, the meta-analyses are really important, or the real-world evidence database studies are really important. So it depends a little bit on where you are on the adoption curve.
Talk a bit about the meta-analysis that's on your website. I admittedly am not great with analysis and data numbers. It's why I went into journalism and why I like talking to people as opposed to reading reports. But what was the reason for that compilation? And it's featured prominently on your site. It's something that obviously you want people to be directed to. What were some of the takeaways from that compilation of those many different studies?
You know, a lot of studies are done procedure by procedure, and we wanted to see kind of the totality of a robotic program. So we looked across multiple procedures, and we looked in different indications. So, you know, gynecology, urology, general surgery. And then we looked at specific outcomes related to the length of the OR, the length of stay, readmissions, complications. And then we did an analysis of all the literature. So we had search criteria and we had selection criteria, and we took the highest level of evidence that was available and we summarized all of that. And so it is a way of looking at the totality of the evidence in a way that you can see all of it, as opposed to this kind of individual paper by paper. And we were able to demonstrate where there was value to patients in robotic surgery compared to open surgery, and where there was value to patients with robotic surgery compared to laparoscopic surgery, and then also saw where there were comparable outcomes and where there were outcomes where perhaps the da Vinci system lagged behind the outcomes for open and laparoscopic.
All right, we'll take a quick break from this conversation to bring back our sponsor, Paragon Medical. I'm here with Zach Stebbings. He is the Divisional Vice President of Sales and Marketing at Paragon Medical. Zach, how does Paragon Medical engage with its clients?
It really depends on the position in the value chain that our customers need us to reside at to deliver the best value. Okay. So for example, if our customer needs design and development services, we have a host of engineers in Mansfield that are ready to engage and design and develop that next gen product. We have two innovation centers within Paragon that stand ready to do rapid prototyping, as well as process development, technology assessment. If our customers need us just to make parts for them, we have robust validation methods. We have a plethora of manufacturing technologies and capabilities at our host that we can draw on. We have robust integrated business planning. We have all those tools to help offer parts and services to our customers that are valuable to them. Now, one thing that doesn't change is how we engage with our customers. We engage proactively and we engage personally. What that means is that we want to get to know your business. We want to be a partner that's engaged at every level we can be to deliver the best value. And we don't want to wait. We don't want to be on our back foot trying to respond to issues. We want to get out ahead. And we want to plan for your success so that the next project you have, Paragon Medical can support you with that too. And as part of this, we know that every single one of our customers is unique. We know that there's not a single solution that fits every need. So we have to customize and craft that solution to deliver the highest level of performance that all of our customers expect.
Well, Paragon Medical is capable of a lot. Maybe we can focus a little bit on one example. Do you have an example that can illustrate how Paragon Medical really engages with medtech companies?
Absolutely. We had a customer come to us basically with a napkin sketch of a product, Tom. And this was probably 10 years back now. Throughout the life cycle, went through concept, iterative prototyping out of our Mansfield facility, 3D printed parts, the whole shebang to get this customer to a point where they had a frozen design. We have the capability to bring the injection molding in-house, and the product started growing as we did our assembly and finished kitting and packaging in Mansfield. Now, it got to the point where volumes were growing so significantly, we brought in automation. So we have automation technology and automation know-how as part of the Paragon Medical umbrella to enable our customers to reach new levels of scale, new levels of production. And that product today is continuing to grow. And so it's an excellent case where we engaged early, we engaged often, we engaged proactively, brought the whole suite of Paragon capabilities into the picture in order to develop and grow this product to a point where it's meeting actual patient needs in the hospitals. And that's really something we're truly proud of.
Well, that's great, Zach. Final question. How does Paragon Medical differentiate itself from its peers?
Two things come to mind, Tom. First, we have both metal and plastic expertise in-house to manage the entirety of the projects for our customers. Now, most companies that I've worked with are either do metal or plastic. We combine both into a seamless solution. Second, we've invested heavily in information sharing and collaboration tools with our customers. We've invested in integrated business planning so we can manage signals, capacity, raw material, labor for our customers. And we've also invested heavily in a PM structure whereby our customers can see direct line of sight into the project schedule and the tasks that we're doing to support your project. Now, this is important because we know that our customers have to feel confident in their journey, their product commercialization journey. When you choose a partner, you're putting a piece of your life, you're putting a piece of your company into that partner's hands. And so with a commitment to transparency and communication and risk mitigation, we build a culture of trust that serves as a launching pad for our customers' products to hit the end market and ultimately take care of patients and their family.
All right, great stuff, Zach. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
It's been great talking with you, Tom. Thank you.
All right, we learned a lot about Paragon Medical. If you want to find out more about the company or reach out, you can go to its website, paragonmedical.com. I'd like to talk a bit about the Da Vinci 5 approval and the whole process, the introduction of it. It was announced, I think, in February. I had approval 2 or 3 months after that. I had made a point in a recent conversation that it was an amazingly short amount of time between introduction and approval. And someone had said, well, Intuitive has really been working on that for a couple of years. And by the way, kudos to them for keeping under wraps, because I think people, there were a lot of whispers of Da Vinci 5 coming out, but nothing was really leaked. So, but could you just give me an inside look as to what went on behind the scenes? So sort of, I don't know what sort of clinical studies you need to do in a system like that that's based upon previous generations of the same system. Were there trials done? What was your role in your many departments' roles in getting Da Vinci 5 ready to be kind of released to the world and through the FDA in a relatively short amount of time?
Yeah, so there's the whole development piece internally. Sure. In terms of, you know, putting everything together. We started our interactions with the FDA probably about 3 years ago, where we first reached out to them and talked to them about what they would need, what data would they need to see in order to give clearance. And so we had conversations with them for over a year until we agreed on the clinical study that they wanted. And what they wanted was a confirmatory study. So they wanted enough patients across enough different experience levels of surgeons, across enough different procedures, that they could get a sense of how it was going to be used across patient populations and across surgeon experience, across different hospitals. It was a tour de force. In all of my years as an academic surgeon, it is the most complex clinical study I have ever seen developed and done. And then we worked with specific hospitals and specific surgeons. It was a study that got data from the OR team as well as patient data. And so enrolling the patients took about three and a half months, and then we had to follow them. And then after that, we had to do all the analysis, write it all up, send it into the FDA, and then months of back and forth, they had questions that we answered. So we finished the study a little bit over a year ago, and then got clearance in February of this year.
So, well, that would explain the 2 months and the fact that you had all that baked in already. But help me understand with how your studies work. I mean, if I'm talking to a company that's developing a new stent or something else, they're putting experiment. So the yet still unapproved device in that patient to test that it works. Did you have surgeons working on iterations of the Da Vinci 5 system? What are they working on to measure the success of this new system?
We had actually hundreds of patients who came in during the development phase and were involved in testing and feedback and development. We had a lot of human factors testing that we had to do. So we got a lot of surgeon and OR team feedback during the development itself. Once we started the study, so for example, we wanted to get data on hernia operations. So we had surgeons, some were novice surgeons, intermediate surgeons, and expert surgeons who would use the Da Vinci 5 on a hernia operation and then also use the Xi on a hernia operation so that we could compare outcomes between the two systems. And then we would collect data on the patients. We would get information from the surgeons. We would get information from the care team. So there was actually three sources of data there: patients, surgeons, and care teams on both the Da Vinci 5 and the Xi.
Wow. So is the Da Vinci 5 used in those trials? It's the same that has been approved, or are you allowed to iterate on the design based upon feedback from a clinical trial? Imagine not. Imagine if something's being tested, that's the system that needs to be the final system. There needs to be a design lock on that, I imagine.
Yes, that's correct. So any further iterations or changes to the system will probably require some more interaction with the FDA and more data.
That's really fascinating. What's your opinion of the Da Vinci 5 as a surgeon? I mean, the interface is really cool, but what are some of your takeaways?
Yeah, so I'm not working at a site that has a Da Vinci 5, although we are trying.
We are trying
to get it. So I've observed surgeons using it, and I've used it in the OR. And the feedback we've gotten, what I've seen, is surgeons really like the autonomy, so they can control things that they couldn't control before. And so how experienced their helpers were before really impacted their ability to focus on the procedure itself. And now they don't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. So they really like that. They feel partially because of that, but partially because of other things, they can be more efficient in the OR, both in terms of doing the procedure, but also turning the room over, which is fantastic for other patients who are on the waiting list, right? Because it opens up OR time. There's some specific features around force feedback or haptics, which we've never had before, that gives surgeons a sense of how hard are they pulling on tissue. So additional information besides the visual feedback. And then there's the capability to capture data, which we hadn't captured before and which we can give back to surgeons that can help them get better and get past their learning curve. So, and I think it's, you know, there's so much more computing power in this system compared to the XI system that it has tremendous potential for the company to continue to figure out how best to help surgeons and the care teams improve.
Dave Rosa spoke at SRS. He was interviewed and talked about the introduction of the force feedback and the haptic feedback. He said some surgeons like it. Some don't, you know, some prefer. Can you help me understand sort of the surgeons that do like it and the surgeons that don't? What is it that maybe they, and I'm not going to ask you to choose a side. what help me understand their position. Why wouldn't someone want to have this sort of feedback on a system?
So generally speaking, what we found is that novice surgeons who are just learning, you know, just starting to use the system really like it, because it gives them that haptic sense, that force feedback that they get normally during open surgery. So it's more comparable to what they're used to. For expert surgeons who have learned how to use the system without the force feedback, they're depending on visual cues. So now they're getting additional information and they're like, okay, well, what do I do with this information? How does it change what I was doing before? Or should it change or should it not change? So it's adding cognitive load to them, right? It's adding information that they're trying to figure out how to use it with the other information that they're using and basing it on. What we found, interestingly enough, is that for both novice and expert surgeons, when they use force feedback, they actually apply less tissue than they did without force feedback. So the expert surgeons accomplish the same task, but with less force on it.
Less force.
Right, which I think is a good thing and is a positive thing. And I think as surgeons understand, okay, how do I incorporate this extra information? They will find it of real value.
So help me understand that. So less force, I mean, intuitively, no pun intended, it says to me that they're doing less damage to tissue because they're applying less forces, and therefore the patient hopefully recovers more quickly. And is that the belief?
Yes, that is exactly the thinking, yes.
Great. I forget. I was joking about you're using this as how you're still performing surgery. Are you still performing?
I do. Still practicing? Yes. I'm very lucky. I'm still an operating surgeon. I work at the Veterans Hospital here in Palo Alto, and I love being in the OR. I love taking care of veterans, and really like seeing, you know, that immediate gratification of making somebody's life better.
That's amazing. How frequently do you?
I try to go every other week.
Amazing. So what is your take as a surgeon and as a member of the team at Intuitive about where surgical robotics is heading in sort of the digital OR perspective? I mean, just we've talked a bit about the data that can come into surgeons after a procedure to help them guide their performance in the future. You've got the cool headset that's kind of providing a view of the OR. I mean, how excited are you and how excited are surgeons about sort of where this field is headed? Because it seems like it's a real generational shift in terms of the setting in which operations will be conducted in the future.
Yeah, I think that there's, a future that's very immediate in terms of, we continue to be adopted in certain procedures. We develop new procedures. So, for example, we have an ongoing study that was approved by the FDA looking at one of our platforms, a single port platform in nipple sparing mastectomy. So that mm-hmm. is not a procedure that's where robotic systems are currently used, except in Korea. What are new procedures that can be done that we couldn't do before? And so how can we help additional patients? But I think you're absolutely right. I think the really exciting thing is what can we do in the digital AI ML space that can collect all of this data, the data from the system, the data from the electronic health record? How can you analyze it and then feed that back, whether it's to patients or surgeons or care team providers or administrators, in order to make the patient journey more efficient, more effective, how to make the hospital more efficient. I mean, there's so many impact places where we can have an impact with that data collection and analysis.
Great. Well, just final question. Let's look a little bit toward the future. What studies do you have that are ongoing that you're obviously, you're not going to give us the results of, but that you're sort of we should be looking out for in the future. And how do you see this all playing out? How does all these studies are great for you confirming the role that Da Vinci and Intuitive can play in the OR? We've, as you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of other surgical robotics companies that are or companies that are developing surgical robotic systems that are coming in. What does this clinical evidence do for Intuitive in that sort of competitive landscape?
Yeah, so I actually think that it gives the competitors a path that has worked for us, right? So there's a good chance that if they follow that path, it will also work for them. But it is so extensive. It's across so many procedures and so many geographies and so many different types of patients, right? It will be a long time before a competitor is able to put enough data into a database where there's tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of patients. So I think it'll probably shorten their path a little bit compared to our path. But it's still, as you can see from the competitors who are out there, it is hard to make a really good, reliable robotic system and that whole ecosystem. It's a real investment.
Absolutely. And just final question about yourself. I mean, how is you're a surgeon. I was going to say you were a surgeon. You are a surgeon. You joined a robotics company, essentially, that's really has introduced so many new products, so many new systems, so many new tools that it's definitely a medical device robotics company. How do you feel Intuitive has changed in your mind from the perspective of a healthcare professional who kind of came on? I think, well, clearly medicine was part of what they were doing, but again, it felt like a technology company. Now it feels like a healthcare company. Do you get a sense of that change? And how do you look at Intuitive differently than you might have a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Right. My initial interactions with the company were really it's developed a platform and instruments that's a surgical device that I can use in my cases. And what I think Intuitive has realized is, you need more than that to have a successful robotics program. And it has really invested in the ecosystem. So training those surgeons and developing the evidence is so important. And Intuitive has really broadened where it's investing and what it sees as is important. It's developed new business models than it had before. So I think it's done a great job of looking at what does the customer need and how can we meet that need. And so it's certainly much more than just the Da Vinci 5 and its instruments now.
Fantastic. All right, great. Well, it's great to have you back. Thanks again for taking some time and joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Intuitive Talks podcast. Thanks, of course, to Paragon Medical for sponsoring this episode and to Dr. Miriam Curet of Intuitive for taking the time to update us on her story on Da Vinci 5 and all that we covered. Once again, you can keep tabs on future episodes. You can receive future episodes of the Intuitive Talks podcast and our other great podcasts by subscribing or following the Device Talks podcast network on whatever podcast player you're using. So please do that. Also, please share this episode on social media so others can find it. Please give us a review and a ranking of the Device Talks podcast network. That helps people find it. And we've got some great numbers up there. So thank you to everyone who has taken the time to give us a rating, and take a moment to write a review. We'd love to hear more about what you have to say about our entire podcast portfolio. Finally, do connect with me on LinkedIn. I am Tom Salemi at Device Talks. You can also connect with our managing editor, Kayleen Brown. Great way to keep in touch with us and to keep tabs of all the great content and events and everything else we'll be putting out in the coming months and years. So, all right, folks, once again, thanks for joining us on this episode of the Intuitive Talks podcast. We're working on the next episode right now, so subscribe and keep your eyes peeled or your ears. Take care, everybody.